The Two Towers, Cassette 7.
He'd hardly said that when we heard the sound of hoofs on the road. We rushed out before the gates, and I stood and stared, half expecting to see Strider and Gandalf come riding up at the head of an army. But out of the mist there rode a man on an old, tired horse, and he looked a queer, twisted sort of creature himself. There was no one else. When he came out of the mist and suddenly saw all the ruin and wreckage in front of him, he sat and gaped, and his face went almost green. He was so bewildered that he didn't seem to notice us at first. When he did, he gave a cry and tried to turn his horse round and ride off. But Treebeard took three strides, put out a long arm, and lifted him out of the saddle. His horse bolted in terror, and he grovelled on the ground. He said he was Grima, friend and counsellor of the king, and had been sent with important messages from Theoden to Saruman. No one else would dare to ride through the open land so full of foul orcs, he said, so I was sent. And I've had a perilous journey, and I'm hungry and weary. I fled far north out of my way, pursued by wolves. I caught the sideways look he gave to Treebeard, and I said to myself, liar. Treebeard looked at him in his long, slow way for several minutes, till the wretched man was squirming on the floor. Then at last he said,
I was expecting you, Master Wormtongue. The man started at that name. Gandalf got here first, so I know as much about you as I need, and I know what to do with you. Put all the rats in one trap, says Gandalf, and I will. I am the master of Isengard now, but Saruman is locked in his tower, and you can go there and give him all the messages that you can think of. Let me go, let me go, said Wormtongue. I know the way. You knew the way, I don't doubt, said Treebeard, but things have changed here a little. Go and see.
He let Wormtongue go, and he limped off through the arch, with us close behind, until he came inside the ring and could see all the floods that lay between him and Orthanc. Then he turned to us.
Let me go away, he whined. Let me go away. My messages are useless now. They are indeed, said Treebeard. But you have only two choices, to stay with me until Gandalf and your master arrive, or to cross the water. Which will you have?
The man shivered at the mention of his master, and put a foot into the water, but he drew back.
I cannot swim, he said. The water is not deep, said Treebeard. It is dirty, but that will not harm you, Master Wormtongue. In you go now.
With that the wretch floundered off into the flood. It rose up nearly to his neck before he got too far away for me to see him. The last I saw of him was clinging to some old barrel or piece of wood. But Treebeard waded after him and watched his progress.
Well, he has gone in, he said when he returned. I saw him crawling up the steps like a draggled rat. There's someone in the tower still. A hand came out and pulled him in. So there he is, and I hope the welcome is to his liking. Now I must go and wash myself clean of the slime. I'll be away up on the north side, if anyone wants to see me. There's no clean water down here fit for an ent to drink, or to bathe in. So I will ask you two lads to keep a watch at the gate for the folk that are coming. There'll be the Lord of the Fields of Rohan. Mark you, you must welcome him as well as you know how. His men have fought a great fight with the orcs. Maybe you know the right fashion of men's words for such a lord better than ents. There have been many lords in the green fields in my time, and I've never heard their speech or their names. They will be wanting man-food, and you know all about that, I guess. So find what you think is fit for a king to eat, if you can.
And that is the end of the story. Though I should like to know who this Wormtongue is. Was he really the king's counsellor?
He was, said Aragorn, and also Saruman's spy and servant in Rohan. Fate hasn't been kinder to him than he deserves. The sight of the ruin of all that he thought so strong and magnificent must have been almost punishment enough. But I fear that worse awaits him.
Yes, I don't suppose Treebeard sent him to Orthanc out of kindness, said Merry.
He seemed rather grimly delighted with the business, and was laughing to himself when he went to get his bath and drink. We spent a busy time after that, searching the flotsam and rummaging about. We found two or three storerooms in different places nearby, above the flood level, but Treebeard sent some Ents down, and they carried off a great deal of the stuff.
"We want man food for 25, the Ent said.
"So you can see that somebody had counted your company carefully before you arrived. You three were evidently meant to go with the great people. But you wouldn't have fared any better. We kept as good as we sent, I promise you. Better, because we sent no drink."
"What about drink?" I said to the Ents.
"There is water of Ison," they said, "and that is good enough for Ents and men."
"But I hope that the Ents may have found time to brew some of their draughts from the mountain springs, and we shall see Gandalf's beard curling when he returns." After the Ents had gone, we felt tired and hungry. But we didn't grumble. Our labours had been well rewarded. It was through our search for man-food that Pippin discovered the prize of all the flotsam, those hornblower barrels. "Pipeweed is better after food," said Pippin. That is how the situation arose.
"We understand it all perfectly now," said Gimli.
"All except one thing," said Aragorn. "Leaf from the south farthing in Isengard. The more I consider it, the more curious I find it. I've never been in Isengard, but I've journeyed in this land, and I know well the empty countries that lie between Rohan and the Shire. Neither goods nor folk have passed that way for many a long year, not openly. Saruman had secret dealings with someone in the Shire, I guess. Worm tongues may be found in other houses than King Theoden's. Was there a date on the barrels?"
"Yes," said Pippin. "It was the 1417 crop. That is last year's. No, the year before, of course, now. A good year."
"Ah, well, whatever evil was afoot is over now, I hope. Or else it's beyond our reach at present," said Aragorn. "Yet I think I shall mention it to Gandalf, small matter though it may seem among his great affairs."
"I wonder what he's doing," said Merry. "The afternoon is getting on. Let's go and look around. You can enter Isengard now at any rate, Strider, if you want to. But it's not a very cheerful sight."
Chapter 10 The Voice of Saruman. They passed through the ruined tunnel and stood upon a heap of stones, gazing at the dark rock of Orthanc, and its many windows, a menace still in the desolation that lay all about it. The waters had now nearly all subsided. Here and there gloomy pools remained, covered with scum and wreckage. But most of the wide circle was bare again, a wilderness of slime and tumbled rock, pitted with blackened holes and dotted with posts and pillars leaning drunkenly this way and that. At the rim of the shattered bowl there lay vast mounds and slopes, like the shingles cast up by a great storm, and beyond them the green and tangled valley ran up into the long ravine between the dark arms of the mountains. Across the waste they saw riders picking their way. They were coming from the north side, and already they were drawing near to Orthanc.
"There is Gandalf, and Theoden and his men," said Legolas. "Let's go and meet them."
"Walk warily," said Merry. "There are loose slabs that may tilt up and throw you down into a pit if you don't take care."
They followed what was left of the road from the gates to Orthanc, going slowly, for the flagstones were cracked and slimed. The riders, seeing them approach, halted under the shadow of the rock and waited for them. Gandalf rode forward to meet them.
"Well, Treebeard and I have had some interesting discussions and made a few plans," he said, "and we've all had some much-needed rest. Now we must be going on again. I hope you companions have all rested too and refreshed yourselves."
"We have," said Merry, "but our discussions began and ended in smoke. Still we feel less ill-disposed towards Saruman than we did.
"Do you indeed?" said Gandalf. "Well, I don't. I've now a last task to do before I go. I must pay Saruman a farewell visit. Dangerous and probably useless, but it must be done. Those of you who wish may come with me, but beware, and don't jest. This isn't the time for it."
"I'll come," said Gimli. "I wish to see him and learn if he really looks like you."
"And how would you learn that, Master Dwarf?" said Gandalf.
"Saruman could look like me, in your eyes, if it suited his purpose with you. And are you yet wise enough to detect all his counterfeits?
Well, we shall see, perhaps. He may be shy of showing himself before many different eyes together, but I've ordered all the Ents to remove themselves from sight, so perhaps we shall persuade him to come out."
"What's the danger?" asked Pippin.
"Will he shoot at us, and pour fire out of the windows, or can he put a spell on us from a distance?"
"The last is more likely, if you ride to his door with a light heart," said Gandalf. "But there's no knowing what he can do, or may choose to try. A wild beast cornered is not safe to approach, and Saruman has powers you don't guess. Beware of his voice."
They came now to the foot of Orthonk. It was black, and the rock gleamed as if it were wet. The many faces of the stone had sharp edges, as though they had been newly chiselled. A few scorings, and small flake-like splinters near the base, were all the marks that it bore of the fury of the Ents. On the eastern side, in the angle of two piers, there was a great door, high above the ground, and over it was a shuttered window, opening upon a balcony hedged with iron bars. Up to the threshold of the door there mounted a flight of 27 broad stairs, hewn by some unknown art of the same black stone. This was the only entrance to the tower, but many tall windows were cut with deep embrasures in the climbing walls. Far up they peered like little eyes in the sheer faces of the horns. At the foot of the stairs Gandalf and the king dismounted.
"I'll go up," said Gandalf. "I've been in Orthonk, and I know my peril."
"And I too will go up," said the king. "I'm old, and fear no peril any more. I wish to speak with the enemy who has done me so much wrong. Eomer shall come with me, and see that my aged feet do not falter."
"As you will," said Gandalf. "Aragorn shall come with me. Let the others await us at the foot of the stairs. They'll hear and see enough, if there's anything to hear or see."
"Nay," said Gimli, "Legolas and I wish for a closer view. We alone here represent our kindreds. We also will come behind."
"Come then," said Gandalf, and with that he climbed the steps, and Theoden went beside him. The riders of Rohan sat uneasily upon their horses, on either side of the stair, and looked up darkly at the great tower, fearing what might befall their lord. Merry and Pippin sat on the bottom step, feeling both unimportant and unsafe.
"Half a sticky mile from here to the gate," muttered Pippin. "I wish I could slip off back to the guard-room unnoticed. What did we come for? We're not wanted." Gandalf stood before the door of Orthonk and beat on it with his staff. It rang with a hollow sound.
"Saruman! Saruman!" he cried in a loud, commanding voice. "Saruman, come forth!"
For some time there was no answer. At last the window above the door was unbarred, but no figure could be seen at its dark opening.
"Who is it?"
said a voice.
"What do you wish?"
Theoden started.
"I know that voice," he said, "and I curse the day when I first listened to it."
"Go and fetch Saruman. Since you've become his footman, Grima Wormtongue," said Gandalf, "and don't waste our time."
The window closed. They waited. Suddenly another voice spoke, low and melodious, its very sound an enchantment. Those who listened unwarily to that voice could seldom report the words that they heard, and if they did, they wondered, for little power remained in them. Mostly they remembered only that it was a delight to hear the voice speaking. All that it said seemed wise and reasonable, and a desire awoke in them by swift agreement to seem wise themselves. When others spoke, they seemed harsh and uncouth by contrast, and if they gainsaid the voice, anger was kindled in the hearts of those under the spell. For some the spell lasted only while the voice spoke to them, and when it spoke to another they smiled, as men do who see through a juggler's trick while others gape at it. For many the sound of the voice alone was enough to hold them enthralled, but for those whom it conquered the spell endured when they were far away, and ever they heard that soft voice whispering and urging them. But none were unmoved. None rejected its pleas and its commands without an effort of mind and will, so long as its master had control of it.
"Well," it said now with gentle question, "why must you disturb my rest? Will you give me no peace at all by night or day?"
Its tone was that of a kindly heart aggrieved by injuries undeserved. They looked up, astonished, for they had heard no sound of his coming, and they saw a figure standing at the rail, looking down upon them, an old man, swathed in a great cloak, the colour of which was not easy to tell, for it changed if they moved their eyes, or if he stirred. His face was long, with a high forehead. He had deep, darkling eyes, hard to fathom, though the look that they now bore was grave and benevolent, and a little weary. His hair and beard were white, but strands of black still showed about his lips and ears.
"Like, and yet unlike," muttered Gimli.
"But come now," said the soft voice.
"Two at least of you I know by name. Gandalf I know too well to have much hope that he seeks help or counsel here. But you, Theoden, Lord of the Mark of Rohan, are declared by your noble devices, and still more by the fair countenance of the House of Eol. A worthy son of Thengel the thrice-renowned, why have you not come before, and as a friend? Much have I desired to see you, mightiest king of western lands, and especially in these latter years, to save you from the unwise and evil counsels that beset you. Is it yet too late? Despite the injuries that have been done to me, in which the men of Rohan, alas, have had some part, still I would save you, and deliver you from the ruin that draws nigh inevitably if you ride upon this road which you've taken. Indeed, I alone can aid you now."
Theoden opened his mouth as if to speak, but he said nothing. He looked up at the face of Saruman with its dark, solemn eyes bent down upon him, and then to Gandalf at his side, and he seemed to hesitate. Gandalf made no sign, but stood silent as stone, as one waiting patiently for some call that has not yet come. The rider stirred at first, murmuring with approval of the words of Saruman, and then they too were silent, as men spellbound. It seemed to them that Gandalf had never spoken so fair and fittingly to their lord. Rough and proud now seemed all his dealings with Theoden, and over their hearts crept a shadow, the fear of a great danger, the end of the mark in a darkness to which Gandalf was driving them, while Saruman stood beside a door of escape, holding it half open, so that a ray of light came through. There was a heavy silence. It was Gimli the dwarf who broke it suddenly.
"The words of this wizard stand on their heads," he growled, gripping the handle of his axe. "In the language of Orthonk, help means ruin, and saving means slaying, that is plain. But we don't come here to beg."
"Peace," said Saruman,
and for a fleeting moment his voice was less suave, and a light flickered in his eyes and was gone.
"I do not speak to you yet, Gimli Glóin's son," he said. "Far away is your home, and small concern of yours are the troubles of this land. But it was not by design of your own that you became embroiled in them, and so I will not blame such part as you have played, a valiant one, I doubt not. But I pray you, allow me first to speak with the King of Rohan, my neighbour, and once my friend. What have you to say, Theoden King? Will you have peace with me, and all the aid that my knowledge, founded in long years, can bring?
Shall we make our counsels together against evil days, and repair our injuries with such good will that our estate shall both come to fairer flower than ever before?"
Still Théoden did not answer. Whether he strove with anger or doubt, none could say. Éomer spoke.
"Lord, hear me," he said. "Now we feel the peril that we were warned of. Have we ridden forth to victory, only to stand at last amazed by an old liar with honey on his forked tongue? So would the trapped wolf speak to the hounds if he could. What aid can he give to you, forsooth? All he desires is to escape from his plight. But will you parley with this dealer in treachery and murder? Remember Théodred at the fords, and the grave of Harmer in Helm's Deep."
"If we speak of poisoned tongues, what shall we say of yours, young serpent?" said Saruman, and the flash of his anger was now plain to see. "But come,
Éomer, Éomund's son," he went on in his soft voice again, "to every man his part. Valor in arms is yours, and you win high honour thereby. Slay whom your lord names as enemies, and be content. Meddle not in policies which you don't understand. But maybe, if you become a king,